I myself am quite tolerable. Practical. Tolerable, practical magician.
Welcome to Lost Hope. My name's Bubba, and with me is...
Catfish.
Catfish, whose face is on the $100 bill?
Alexander Hamilton?
The bargain is set. Stephen, reach into Catfish's pocket and remove his $100, which he shall give to me and the magician's wife.
Wow, that was some amazing magic you did right there.
The bargain is made. So, Catfish, here we are. We're going to review episode 5 of BBC One and BBC America's adaptation of Susanna Clarke's novel, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. This is chapter 5, Arabella. Let's get...
Right, 5 of 7.
5 of 7. We are 50% done. No. We are only 2 episodes left, so Catfish, let's get to it. What are you going to give episode 5 your rating out of 10?
Well, first, let me say the valuable lesson I learned from this episode that I'm going to take to my life,
okay,
my usual life, and that is never renounce all your other wives.
Right.
Just accept all of them.
Right.
Accept every single wife / significant other you have.
Yeah, because you don't want to make that bargain, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Always accept. I'm going to give this 8.
8.
Completed sea beacons out of the 10 completed sea beacons that we need for them, the sea beacons to actually be completed.
The sea beacons get no respect. They are the always dissed sea beacons.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, why did it get an 8?
Well, it was a little low there for a while, but I was like, okay, you know what? It's low because I feel sad because of Belle. So, you know, because it engaged my emotions, I gave it an 8. I did feel, I know it seems strange to say considering we had a faux death and there was some excitement having to do with Lady Pool. I still felt a little slow to me this episode.
Oh, okay. Well, I am going to give this episode 9 what I like to call triple M's out of 10.
Triple M's?
Yeah, triple M. I use the term triple M anytime I need to refer to messy mud magic. So 9 bits of messy mud magic out of 10.
I don't know how I forgot that one. You're always giving me a hard time when I forget things. It's the triple M's that I always forget the most.
Yeah, I thought this episode started really strong at Waterloo. And then you're right. It you know, it certainly turned sad, certainly turned slow. But that ending, and it is just like the last 2 to 4 minutes of the episode where where Mr. Strange just snaps and he's like, what? He's trying to stop my book. He wouldn't give me any help. And he travels through the mirror to Mr. Norrell's place. And just that whole scene I loved.
I do like when he has the idea, hey, why don't I just become nuts? And I think his friend makes a good point. You can't just choose to be nuts. Like all the women that I dated in college, I don't think they chose. I just think they were...
They worked at it.
Nuts.
Okay.
I think they came by it naturally.
Right.
And my attraction to them also came naturally, but I weaned myself off.
All right, I need to issue a correction.
Uh-oh.
Last week...
What did you mess up?
Last week, I said it was episode 4 that Peter Harness, the screenwriter who adapted this novel, said was episode 4 was his favorite. But it's actually this episode, chapter 5, which he says is his favorite.
And by the way, I like this. You were corrected by Peter Harness himself. I think that's great. He's like, no.
Well, I have not seen... every episode, but I have seen the next episode, episode 6, and spoiler alert, that might be my favorite episode.
What?
So we've let's just say it right now. This adaptation is...
That was better.
This adaption is wonderful.
It is.
It is just great.
It is.
I always joke about how we're the only Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell podcast. There should be more. This is damn good.
It's very good. It's very well. As we said, it's very well scripted. It's well shot. It's amazingly well acted, and it's just all coming together. I love it.
Yeah. Now on today's episode,
and then, let me say this: it's amazing because I think the screenwriter does know you well.
Know me well.
Yeah, because he had a line that I've heard you say to the ladies, only slightly modified it.
Okay, what was that?
Well, your line that you use is, to the ladies, you walk up to him usually and you say, I do not offer anything to you that will be exquisitely agreeable to you in any way, shape, or form. Slightly put a slightly spin on it, said mm-hmm. that will not be exquisitely agreeable to you. So you know what? Mm. This is, you know, I've been out with you when you make your move on the ladies, and I have to say you are eminently quotable at that point.
Let's edit that all from our minds. Folks, on today's podcast, we're going to recap and review this wonderful episode chapter five, Arabella. We have had some great guests. We had the screenwriter himself, Peter Harness. Mm-hmm. We're so grateful he was a guest. We had the wonderful Kate Nevue, who did those great book reviews, rereads on tor.com.
Mm-hmm.
We had John Repian, who has been writing those great articles on Fairy for Daily Grail. And today we have yet another awesome, super special guest.
Wait, you forgot the guest we had. We had Uncle Murray. Little Murray.
You mean last week we had Little Murray. Catfish, yeah. How old was Little Murray?
Little Murray is 11.
So when this says it's TV-14...
Well, let's just say this. Uncle Catfish Camp is also known as Inappropriate Camp, where every year we do more and more inappropriate things. So I said to her this year when I was taken to the airport, what was the most inappropriate thing that we did this year?
What'd she say?
Well, her first response was, well, you really stepped it up this year. Let's just say we watched about 10 episodes of Inside Amy Schumer. And is inappropriate to watch with your 11-year-old niece.
You are being reported to Child Services.
I stepped it up this year.
Yes.
Okay, so who is the fifth guest that we have?
The guest on this week's show is somebody we've said we've wanted for a long time. He is an expert. It's a guy I like to call Double M.
Double M?
Yes, Matt Murdock.
Oh, I was waiting for this.
The host of SorkinCast, a podcast about the works of Aaron Sorkin, the host of Podcast Winterfell about George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. Everybody, Matt is so wonderful. On his podcast Winterfell, he breaks down some of the music from the HBO show Game of Thrones. And he's done that for this wonderful series where he's taken a look at some of the music, some of the scoring, and it's certainly great in this episode 5 as well. And so Matt, that's going to be after we review and recap the show.
This is another
this is
value added podcasting right here.
Oh, well, all the guests have been great. Matt, folks, right after we get done with our recap and review, mm-hmm. we're going to check that out. It's so great. Plus, we're going to get to your tweets, your opinions, and your iTunes reviews you've been kind enough to give us. It's going to be what I like to call a double P podcast.
Double P?
A packed podcast.
So that would be a packed podcast then if you say double P podcast.
All right.
All right. So and we have some good news for our double L's.
Our double L's.
Loyal listeners.
All right. That's what they
are. Is that after begging, after what it feels like years and years of begging.
Yes.
First we got a response from the writer of
Peter
this great
Harness,
show.
Yeah.
Who offered to send us a signed script.
That would be wonderful.
Which we would love,
To
no end. That I think would be number one on the list.
Yeah.
But then after much berating, once again, I've been left out. But you received a message.
Yeah, BBC America said they want to send us some giveaways that we can give to you, our wonderful listeners. And it's really you guys who, through your gentle prodding... has convinced them to share some prizes with us that we'll be given. We haven't received any yet, so until then, know that your prize will be the footnote bell, but hopefully we'll receive some. But that means you got to get your tweets in with hashtag Lost Hope Podcast. You got to get your iTunes reviews in to be eligible to win whatever possible great prizes we might receive.
Listen to me. We're not going to hold on to anything. There's no reason to hold on to the bell, and there's not going to be a season 2 of this show. The bell's going to go.
Right.
The signed script. Every single thing we get is going to go. We're not holding on to a damn thing except for our pride.
We won't hold on to that.
Oh, I've lost that already.
Let me do some housekeeping, Catfish, real
quick. Clean it up.
And tell our listeners about the other podcasts here on the Double P Podcast Network. We have got a brand new podcast where my friend Tosh and I, we are reviewing the chapters of Harper Lee's new novel, the prequel/sequel to the classic To Kill a Mockingbird. It's the Go Set a Watchman read-along podcast. Please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, and download and subscribe to it as we read this possibly wonderful, possibly disappointing and heartbreaking new novel from Harper Lee. We've also got, if you're a fan of George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire mm-hmm. saga and the HBO series Game of Thrones, we've got the Joffrey podcast, certainly our most crazy fun podcast that we've been doing the longest. Go to iTunes, download it. And then tonight, Catfish, Sunday night.
Oh, my goodness.
We are doing yet another podcast.
It's never enough.
And what's it about, Catfish?
It is about FX's great vampire show, The Strain.
The Strain, based on whose book, Catfish?
Well, Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan.
Wow. And it is debuting season two tonight, so we're also going to recap and review probably a much shorter version of the recap and review of it than we do on this show. It's The Strain. The podcast is entitled Got Your Milk. So go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, download it and check it out and give us your feedback on those.
And I'm trying to get you to agree to doing Ash versus the Evil Dead podcast on that show.
For our listeners who don't know what that is, Catfish, why don't you explain to them what that's going to be coming up in October?
It is. If someone is not aware of Bruce Campbell and the Evil Dead series, it's a series that Sam Raimi, who's gone on to direct a lot of other things, started off with, very low budget. He did Evil Dead, which was a very coolly done horror movie, even though you never saw the bad guy. That was what made it so cheap. It was the bad guy was the camera doing coming at you. And then the cool part is, he essentially made the same exact movie for Evil Dead 2, only this time it was funnier. And then about 8 years after that one.
It was a while.
They did the third movie in that series called Army of Darkness, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Wow.
It has got some amazing lines in it.
Okay.
I'll just sit and watch it to the end.
So that seems like old stuff. Why are we going to podcast about that?
It does seem like old stuff. Well, because Stars, that great network Stars with a Z.
That's the way I always spell Stars. What?
Okay, all right. So just for you, the normal way you spell Stars is doing a new show called Ash versus the Evil Dead. And I think it's 10 episodes, but this is something that will presumably go on if Stars finds it worthwhile and valuable. So that one is bound to be very tongue-in-cheek style, somewhat like our podcast, so I don't know if we can do any more about that.
And that's coming up in October of this year, 2015.
So if there's any interest to that, just let us know. We did have a request from someone to do another show.
Oh, really? Let's hear it.
Sci-Fi is doing The Expanse, which is a strictly a science fiction show.
Right. I read the first book in that series, and I don't like to say this too much. I really thought the book was kind of okay to poor. One of my reviews was actually a tweet where I said, I think the TV series might be better than the book. There's a chance they could clean it up.
Well, I have had a lot of hope and a lot of sci-fi sci-fi shows that have disappointed me all. So I don't know. We'll give it a chance. Maybe we watch the first episode and then decide whether we want a podcast or not.
Very, very smart. But hey, if you guys have reviews, tweet at us and let us know anything you'd like us to cover. You can reach me, Bubba. I'm at Fit and Trim on Twitter. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And I'm at CJGman67.
Oh.
If you're looking at CJGman's, I'm your 67th favorite one.
Going to be scrolling through a lot. let's get back to this wonderful show, Jonathan Stranger, Mr. Norrell. Before we
almost
begin,
forgot about it.
I'm gonna let Catfish. Let me start off with some quote unquote news. So we know that our listeners over in the UK, in Scotland, in
Wales,
the
pond,
in England, they got to watch this show, and they were about four episodes ahead of us here in the United States.
Right.
Sure enough, right after episode four aired here in the United States on BBC America, it suddenly Jonathan Stranger, Mr. Norrell debuted in Canada, but it's especially crazy what's happening up in Canada.
Tell me.
So, it debuted in Canada, but only some Canadians get access to it. This is what's so crazy. So, if you live east of the Manitoba-Ontario border, you can see it on a network called The Movie Channel. So, you could start seeing last week episode one, this week episode two. But if you lived west of there, so say you lived in Manitoba and west, all the way to Vancouver,
of course.
You don't have access to that channel at all, and you can't even see the show.
What?
It was all based about kind of co-financing and that kind of stuff.
Okay,
and
so in America, this is the question for our American viewers. Yeah. Would you rather have immediate access to Jonathan Stranger, Mr. Norrell, or universal health care?
Well, we didn't get either, actually, so it's kind of tough for us. But anyway, in Canada, it was the people who put up some money for it was this thing called the Space Channel, like their version of Sci-Fi.
Okay.
And so it was going to be seen across all of Canada. But then they realized, well, you know, it doesn't really fit in with our space theme at all. And so they kind of went, you know, their sister station was this thing called the Movie Network. But of course, that's only available in Eastern Canada. And so it's crazy. Our friends in Vancouver and stuff, they haven't even had a chance to see this great miniseries.
Well, that doesn't seem fair since many of our sci-fi shows are filmed in Vancouver.
It is very unfair. And so, Canadian listeners, hopefully you'll find out about our podcast and catch up and keep tweeting us even after it's off the air here in the United States. We want your feedback. Okay. So
we love our listeners north of the border.
Right. So if you're in any part of the world, and you're just now getting...
Are we building a wall on that side, too?
I don't know. Listen to me. If you're on any part of the world, and you're just now getting Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, and somehow watching this podcast before you actually can see it...
right.
Which, trust me, has happened in countries.
Five.
I can see the stats. Go ahead and tweet at us, and let us know what you think. All right, so now, let's get into Chapter 5, Arabella. And it starts, Catfish. Tough. It is, of course, time to begin with... A footnote.
Okay.
In Catfish, you're going to have to help me. Even though I took French, how would you pronounce...
Oh, boy.
This right here. I took
Latin.
Chateau...
It's Chateau de...
De Hougomont?
Yeah.
Hougomont?
Or it might be Hougomont.
Hougomont.
Okay.
So it is a large farmhouse situated at the bottom of an encampment near Waterloo.
Got it.
And in this little house that we see here at the beginning of the episode is where the British and other Allied forces faced Napoleon's army at the Battle of Waterloo on June 18th.
Okay.
1815.
Okay, thanks for the year.
Now, very famous, it was this sous-lieutenant Legros who broke in, who entered the Chateau Hougomont, and he was wielding an axe. He managed to break through the north gate. And a desperate fight ensued between the invading French soldiers and the defending guards in a near miraculous attack. MacDonald, a small party of officers, and Corporal James Graham fought the melee to shut the gate again, trapping this guy with the axe and 30 other French soldiers. And then everybody was killed. And
now, so we know that's not the way it happened.
Well, now we know it actually. That's Wikipedia. Wikipedia didn't realize that Jonathan Strange was the guy who took care of this jerk with the axe.
We'll have to update it when we do our Norapedia.
Right. We'll have to update this. And this is one of those things. I don't like talking about specifics from the books because I get a lot of tweets. A lot of people write in and they say, hey, I'm going to watch the series and then read the books. But this is one of those times where they had to condense things for a TV budget. So they had all the action happen here inside the Chateau Hougomont. And but it's still a great, powerful opening.
Absolutely.
Really strong thing. And we see that because this chateau has been fired upon, Jonathan Strange is bringing rain to put out the fire, and the soldiers are like, hey, stop this. You're making it very miserable and sloppy and tough to fight.
It's kind of funny because at this point, we kind of assume that he could quickly do anything. It's almost shocking that this fight is happening at all, that he hasn't just like overwhelmed everybody by like making like a big mud or water wave to push all the other guys back.
Right. Well, it was, remember, just back in episode 3, Catfish, you called it as possibly foreshadowing the infamous line when the Duke of Wellington asked Strange, he said, could a magician use magic to kill a man? And he said, well, someone could. So, you know, magic could be used to kill a man, but a magician never would.
A gentleman never would.
A gentleman. Well, does that mean Jonathan Strange is no longer a gentleman? Because first he uses some magic to talk to the vines and uses the vines to start straggling the French soldiers who are climbing the wall. And he's flinging these poor guys. You know, it's like magic can't kill a man, but maybe magic can really F somebody up.
Well... My only concern about not using magic to kill a man is once you're in a war for a couple weeks and you realize...
War is hell.
It's either us or them.
Yeah.
I think that goes down very quickly. Your resistance to trying to kill someone. I mean, you know...
Let's just do this.
He's not Batman.
Right. And so sure enough, this guy breaks through with an axe And one of his friends, I have to be honest, I don't remember this officer's name, but he was one of the people with Strange and Grant, the other soldier with Strange and Grant last week at the billiard hall. He gets taken down by this axe. And I'm not usually a fan. In fact, let me just say it. I am not a fan of slow-mo or this strobe effect they use, but it's still pretty powerful when Strange reaches his hands into the mud and decides to take this guy out the old-fashioned way.
Well, I just have to say, I mean, I think what they do with having without having to choreograph a bunch of fighting,
right?
They make this, you know, you really get a sense of the desperation and the sort of ugliness and the craziness of the hand-to-hand combat. No pun intended.
And the body-to-hand combat that this poor French soldier, that is a tough way to go.
Yeah, yeah. He squeezes him out.
Oh, my Lord. Which do you think, did you like all the effects? We had the water effect to put out the fire, we had the vines, and now the bloody,
the hand effect.
Muddy hand.
I love the hand effect.
I did, too. That was really, really good.
And so really smartly, you know, okay, we get that. I didn't know that it was that this was like the defining battle.
Right.
But boom, we go back to home where Strange and Belle are there.
This is like, it's almost like a flashback to Waterloo. He's going to have a little scene with his wife and then he'll flash back to Waterloo. But Strange has PTSD, doesn't he?
He does. And it's funny, for a second, you almost wonder, like, did he not go to war? I mean, I know that, you know, they said he was going to go off, but it's kind of an interesting thing that happens for a second. You're like, okay, well, what is actually going on? And then when we go back and see, I figured it out. But also a very interesting, the total DB commander.
What do you mean, the Duke of Wellington?
Yeah.
Not Grant. Grant's a good guy.
I mean the big guy. Says something very powerful.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, after Waterloo has happened and Napoleon's been defeated yet again, Grant comes up. Both Strange and Grant are shocked that the other is alive. I mean, this obviously was a bloody, just terrible war. One of the things I heard about this is that these wars of Napoleonic wars were the last wars before photography. And so that's one of the fun things about the setting of this time period, is that's why you don't have any pictures of Jonathan Strange or anything. But the war is over.
I mean, besides the fact that he's not real?
Catfish, spoiler alert when you say these things. So enough, here is the Duke of Wellington, and he says, well, gentlemen, the war is over. What do you think they'll do with us now?
Yeah, and that is pretty, I mean, you know, they... Again, what somebody had told Belle, and that she was worried about, that, you know, when they, after they come back from war,
right,
they're not the same because they want to be out there doing war. And I believe that about Wellington, but I never believe that about Strange.
No.
He's not the kind of guy to relish, at least up to this point, a fight in any way. He doesn't really like conflict.
Right. But would you, I would say... that this is what Belle wanted in the last episode. She's like, I want you home. I don't want you going on the King's Road and getting into, you know, possible more dangerous here.
Right.
Let's just go back and retire.
So,
and Strange, what I was going to say, sorry, let me just finish this point. What I was going to say is that Strange has a lot of things. He's happy that he's writing his book. He's happy that he's with Arabella.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the lack of being a practical magician and this PTSD, I'm not sure he's totally happy in this kind of post-war setting. You know, how could you be after you lived through that? What were you going to say?
Well, that's funny. So I have a totally different opinion, which is that considering, yes, he's got the PTSD, but considering he seemed happy to be writing his book. He seemed to be happy to be out there in the countryside. It's almost as if what we were worried about last episode, that everything was going to be fine, but then the war got in the way. It didn't really seem like this war got in the way too much, at least the way that it's pictured here.
Well, in this first scene, maybe, yes, but later... in this first scene, I think the war has kind of scarred him a
bit. I believe later, that the war scarred him, but then he seems to get back to comfort.
Right,
And then we don't see him struggling with that life. To me, I don't see him struggling with that life. They never get to a point where it's a struggle, and then the thing with Belle comes up. It seems to me like he's settling, he's happy, he hasn't gotten restless yet, and then the Belle thing happens. So he could have, but I don't see any signs of it.
To me, the way I read it is that he was you know, just kind of lost as you would be after all this stuff.
Right.
And he's slowly warming back and coming back to normal. And there's that scene where, which we're going to get to in a bit, where Arabella says, hey, let's have kids. And that would be like his final, okay, I can release, I can do this. And of course, you know, that's right when things really go to hell for him.
Right. So I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But what I was saying was that the last, it almost seemed to me like, and this is a thing that always bothers me, the kind of the Romeo and Juliet thing where like everything's going to be fine. And then one thing happens and that's the, then that's the point where everything changes. To me, that's the war is not what changed him.
Right. So you've brought up a good point, Catfish. Shakespeare was a hack.
Good. Yes. Sorry. You know what? That's you were always right. able to cut through all the bullshit and get right to exactly what I'm trying to say.
So Arabella is showing Jonathan these etchings that have been made of the King's Road for his book. And if he's a little wounded, there at least is a sign of happiness.
And then what I love was, yeah, there's a scene with the guy who's going to publish the book, and it's our old friend George Wendt.
This gentleman, this character, does look a lot like George Wendt from Cheers. Norm! But this is, get ready for it, folks.
Talk to me.
This is John Murray. He's a Scotchman and a publisher and seller of books and magazines. Various luminaries of the English literary and political world are accustomed to frequent his rooms, and Lord Byron is among his authors.
Wow. That's a good one. Hold on.
Yeah?
Just another side note just from us.
Sure.
Is that we saw a live version of Reanimator the Musical that George Wendt was in.
That's true.
And that was quite enjoyable. If you have a chance to see that musical, I recommend it highly. The Evil Dead musical, I'm not a huge fan of. But Reanimator, great.
Catfish, we're giving reviews of everything on this
Everything. Part. This is what it's all about.
But you know who wouldn't want us to give any more reviews, especially not in Jonathan Strange's book, is Mr. Neural. He is PO'd. He doesn't want that book sold at all. And of course, this publisher, Mr. Murray, he's like, I gotta publish it. And he's like, listen, magic is a popular thing. The magazine Friends of English Magic sold well. Mr. Strange, your book, and Mr. LaSalle's book sold well. Well, until it got reviewed. Ooh.
Right. Now, that's kind of a funny thing, because usually you would think
yeah.
that, you know, there's no publicity is bad publicity. And he didn't say it was badly written. So you'd think my people might go, oh, well, let me see what all the hubbub is about. So I think it might actually sell more books.
No, apparently magic can be used to kill people. We saw in earlier the episode, and reviews can be used to kill books.
Okay, good to know.
And of course, we find out that Jonathan Strange's book is going to be published in August of 1816, and boy, LaSalle's and Norrell are upset. In LaSalle and Norrell on the carriage ride back
mm-hmm.
to Hanover Square, Norrell says something very interesting to Mr. LaSalle's, and he says, and he's talking about Strange's book. He's like, what have I ever done to Strange? How could he injure me like this?
Mm-hmm.
And do you see Strange as writing this book to hurt Norrell? Or is he just doing it to do it because he wants the other side, the Raven King, the pro-Raven King side out there?
He does, but if he thought about it, he would have known that both the review and writing his own book would hurt Norrell. That doesn't mean that he shouldn't do it. But he should recognize, hey, this it's going to upset this person. He knows him well enough.
Well, so many things upset Mr. Neural. It's kind of,
well, that's what
how
I'm
do you
saying.
Narrow it down?
That's what I'm saying. The other thing is, let me just say technically here, because yeah. we have, throughout this episode, right. there are like four or five different scenes that sort of lead up to the book getting, that it's not going to be published.
The big blow up.
Yeah. I don't know. I think maybe that was enough. Maybe just two or three of those scenes. I mean, once this topic was brought up, I had no doubt that they'd find a way to block the book.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. We haven't actually reached August of 1816 yet, so we'll see if the book comes out.
Oh, all right.
All right. So,
wait, can't you just read on Norrapedia whether it came out?
I don't have admin rights there. Like,
oh,
I
okay. All right. Sorry.
So. Meanwhile, while this Jonathan Strange is having happy life at home,
mm-hmm.
and we have Norrell getting upset about this book, we see out on the moors, and I'm going to call everything the moor. Any bit
sure,
of countryside, I'm going to say, look
why
at that,
not?
There's the good old moor.
It's foggy.
And well, it's snowy. It's obviously yeah, winter
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
And we see somebody out riding, and he notices a woman in black. And when he calls to her, the woman turns around, and it looks like it's Arabella. And here's Arabella out in the snowstorm in just a thin dress and without any shoes. Mm-hmm. And this guy is calls to her, but she disappears into the fog. He's like, madam, let me help you.
Yeah, but before that, we do see that it's actually,
right.
Let's call it Bizarro Arabella. Well, how should we refer to her as?
Moss Oak A. It's Moss Oak A for Arabella. And Moss Oak A, great acting, don't you think? Because you can tell the difference between the two. One is just completely. Friggin' nuts. Not too human, old Moss Oak A. So this gentleman, he knows the Stranges, and he rides in to tell Jonathan Strange. He's like, hey, I was out riding, and I saw Lady Strange. And he's like, my mom's dead. He's like, no, listen. I saw your wife. I know her. I've known her since she was a kid, because I've lived here my whole life.
And this is, I think, pointing out something that's happened before already.
What's that?
Is that... Even though Strange likes to do magic, his sort of intellectual curiosity is a little low.
This is not the first time someone's told him something that I would have investigated.
But him, he's just like, nah, whatevs. It's no biggie. You just didn't figure it out.
Right. And as this guy leaves, the guy's like, listen, I saw your wife. It was her. As the guy leaves, he says, you know, watch her. Pay attention. Make sure your wife's okay. So this guy knows something is up, but God bless Jonathan Strange. He can't believe it. He can't put his head around it. Maybe because he says in this scene, he hasn't done any practical magic since Waterloo. So he can't get his head around it.
Right. His intellectual curiosity is at zippo.
Right. I wish he had, though. Obviously, right. He wishes he had.
Let's just say, though, that what we forgot to mention was that room should be familiar, because the last time we saw that room, it was very cold.
Right. Once your dad died in this room, you make that your study. You're like, no, exactly. It was his study. It'll be my study now. Catfish, now you've read the book, but did you remember what was going to happen?
No.
Oh, it is terrible. So let's get to the final scene of happiness between Jonathan and Arabella. They're in their bedroom.
Up to this point.
Right. And they're in their bedroom. And what's interesting is Mr. Norrell is obsessed with Strange in his book. But Mr. Strange, he's like, you know, it's an academic quarrel. Yeah, big deal.
Whatever. No, yeah, whatevs. We'll both get a little notoriety.
We'll be forgotten. You know, we'll be forgotten. Big deal.
It ain't no thing. It ain't no thing.
And so here's where I think he's like, okay, I can do this. Let me get busy with my beautiful wife.
Heck yeah.
And nothing looks sexier than her in a full nightshirt that goes all the way to her ankles.
I mean,
so you can't see anything.
Back in those times, they're practically buck naked. I mean, she's practically,
he can see a bit of
like stripped down for him.
Right. He can see a bit of her shoulder, a.k.a. she's showing too much.
That's right. Bam. Listen, you hussy.
So they decide to have kids. And this is one of those things like, I'm about to retire from the police force.
Exactly.
You never want to say anything like that. And sure enough, as we leave them and go to Staircross Hall, the lunatic asylum for anybody magically afflicted.
It is. Right now, it's just room for one.
Room for one. But Lady Pole, boy, she has had a miserable life.
Mm-hmm.
If she died, and once again the timeline gets a bit tricky, if she died in 1807, this is like 7 to 8 years she's been suffering through this stuff.
Right, oh, they sort God. Of try and, you know, age
Fudge,
her
right.
up, and they kind of age Strange up.
Yeah, everybody, is even even our boy Segundus here in this scene has a little gray in his hair.
Mm-hmm.
So she wakes up, she knows something's wrong, she's like, you gotta go tell Mr. Strange, Mr. Honeyfoot, Mr. Segundus, go to Mr. Strange, he can't accept the bargain. And outside, we see a carriage pulling up to the Strange house. This is cross-cut. This carriage has these great branches and weeds and scary stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, boy.
And your boy is taking notes, though, of what Lady Pole is saying. So, because he's like, let me write this down, because I like to write.
Honeyfoot. Yeah, Honeyfoot is slowly beginning to piece stuff together.
Now it seems to me that somehow... Yeah. Belle's been kind of enchanted here.
Right,
imagine that she would have been like, let me get out of bed and let me not put on my clothes and jump into this carriage.
Right, and let me get the door. They had servants. If somebody rang at the door, no, this is a special enchantment. I should say that one of the things in their happiness, Arabella and Jonathan Strange were talking about, you know, he's like, I'll chop down the trees and I'll take care of the East Garden. And that's a bit of a callback to the last episode where Jonathan's like, you told me to get a profession and I got one and now you're upset. And she said, you know, I would hope you'd be something like a gardener. And so now, now he's actually gardening.
You sure was that? I know that was landscape architect, which is slightly different.
So yeah, she must be enchanted a bit already because she hears the knock. She goes downstairs.
Right. Boom.
And do you want to call out Stephen for maybe he doesn't have a choice, but I don't know, assisting in this bit of terribleness? Oh, my God.
I'm more and more I'm on the side of Stephen is a dick.
Well, Stephen, he comes to Arabella. He says...
But I'll say this. Yeah. His outfit tonight was beautiful.
He was sharp-dressed man.
Yeah, yeah. He's looking good. He's looking king-like.
Okay. Well, he comes to Arabella and he tells her your friend is in trouble, implying Lady Pole, I need you to come. She stole, you know, he's like, you've got to come with me. She's in great distress.
Right.
And what a terrible ruse to get Arabella into this enchanted carriage. And oh boy, we are not deep into the episode. We're only 18 minutes in and everything is going to hell. Everything you were afraid of. Catfish,
but they do it interesting again with the way the camera's sort of cocked and she's sort of in a funk
kind
of thing. And so it's very clear. It's clear. Well, later on we see Stephen may be many things, but a safe driver is not one of them.
No. And they cross cut a lot of that with Lady Pole screaming. It is just very, very effective, wonderful work. Jonathan Strange wakes up. You know, it almost sounds like there's a window open and there's rustling. But of course, you wouldn't suspect anything, would you? You
know,
your wife just got up early. And
he wakes up. It's like a lot of your college days. Goes to bed with somebody, wakes up alone.
Hey, that was in a private journal, Catfish. You weren't supposed to be reading that.
Well, I was going to publish it.
Okay. You can't publish this book. Seditious.
So he just decides to eat, whatever.
Well,
lady's out.
Right, it's snowing and freezing cold outside, so she must have gone out for a walk. What's he thinking here? And sure enough, this same gentleman rides up to the house, but now Mr. Strange can tell something's going on. He goes, Mary, go find my wife. He says that even before the guy's entered the house. He can tell something's wrong. And Strange is beginning to put two and two together. Mary comes back, the maid, she says, your wife isn't in the house.
His house is so big.
Right.
He thought she might have been in some other part of the house.
Right. In the this is where my dad died room.
Yeah, right. Right. So he decides to go look. He decides to look for her the only way he knows how, and that's to fill up the bowl of water.
To do a magic trick. And this magic trick, you can tell, once again, it scares the maid. She's like,
right.
Oh, crap.
Is he using the find my worst enemy spell?
No, that requires a mirror. This is his bowl of water. But what's interesting is he should know something's up, in my opinion. He's like, she's not in England, Wales, or Scotland. Obviously, if she's not in any of those places, she's gone somewhere magical.
Once again, even though he can imagine all these great things, he imagines that he's the only one who can do it. So he doesn't imagine that there's any kind of nefariousness happening that someone else could be doing it. I mean, at the very least, think, whoa, Noro hates
right,
me. Maybe he's done something. But no, he doesn't suspect because let's just put it this way. He's kind of a himbo.
Hey now.
I'm just saying.
Hey now, are you saying you're no longer on Team Strange?
I'm still on Team Strange. Look, I have a sweet but stupid dog. I still love him.
So they go out in a search party in the snow, and this is just utter misery. Jonathan Strange, he can tell something's really wrong. He comes back. They've spent the whole day searching, and the search party is there in his study. Strange says something here. He goes, I think I remember her getting up and leaving.
Right.
And the search party's like, you didn't say this before, and I wonder if this is where some people begin to suspect if maybe he had done something. Like, well, gee, you didn't say that before.
Oh, good point. I wondered why that scene happened at the time.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up.
So we cut away from them to
Stephen, the horrible driver.
He can't control these wild horses.
Horrible driver.
And this image right here is really how I always imagined the interconnection between our world and the fairy world. And
okay.
We have a scene of the carriage, and it goes over this bridge, and you can tell it's like leaving normal-looking land, and it's going into the land of fairy. And this is how, in the books, I always imagined it, something like this. And sure enough, Stephen is bringing Arabella to Lost Hope. Oh!
Woo! Podcast. Remember, Lost Hope podcast.
Right. If he had brought her to our podcast, things would have been better off. But instead,
that would have been a hell of an interview.
Right. She would have been a more special guest than all our special guests. It's like, here's Arabella. But suddenly, back in the strange household, the doors fly open and in walks Moss Oak A.
Moss Oak A.
And she is... Oh, my God.
Basically, it seems like she's got some lines that she's been given
right
by the man with the thistle down hair. And there's pretty much kind of a timer on her. As soon as she says a certain amount of lines and she gets the response she wants, that's her expiration date.
Right. So let's go through the three bullet points. Am I your wife? Jonathan Strange pretty much says, of course you are. You are. She goes, do you accept me as your wife? And he's like, yes, yes, yes. And then the final curse, the final dagger. This whole scene, it's great. It's intercut with the real Arabella being dragged into the Lost Hope. Oh, so terrible. And so the final dagger, what is it, Catfish? What is he going to make?
He says, do you renounce anyone else, all your other wives?
And he says,
I do.
Of course I do. Oh, yeah. My
Again,
God.
Lesson learned. Do not renounce your other wives.
Dear Lord, no. That's the most important lesson, fellas. Do you denounce your other girlfriends? No.
No ways.
When they say, do you recognize me as your wife or girlfriend? Say no. Just in case.
Good point. Good point.
You don't want to be.
Or you can always say, let me get back to you on that.
Right. Let me check. Maybe knock on her head, see if it sounds like wood.
Right. 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 She'll understand.
Right. And so Arabella is here in the ballroom in Lost Hope. And she's like, I thought you were bringing me to Lady Pole.
She still has kind of her wits about her.
Yeah, she hasn't truly been enchanted yet.
But as soon as she turns around
Thistledown.
And sees our boy, well, oh man. So, and again, this is intercut, you know, dealing with Moss Oak A along with the actual Belle being enchanted. And Moss Oak A, she, again... It reminds me of some relationships I had in college. Wide-eyed, crazy.
Did they dish you as bad as she says you're a poor husband to Jonathan? Did your crazy girls ever dish you that much?
Absolutely, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, my policy in college was you could say whatever you want as long as, you know.
Oh, no.
Moving on.
Okay. Well, I want to say this, Catfish,
and that is
that people on Twitter have—they don't always, just because, let's be honest, there are too many characters. They don't always say refer to him by the gentleman with thistle down hair. Do you know what people on Twitter just tend to refer to him as?
Talk to me.
Eyebrows.
Eyebrows, huh?
Yes. Yeah, can you guess why that is?
Well, I can because, as I said, I think the image they came up with is let's do a combination of Sting and Brad Dourif from Dune.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brad Dourif had the
he had
the eyebrows
and Sting
the crazy
had the pompadour
hair.
With white hair.
Yeah, so boom, it's a combo platter.
And I had to retweet this when I saw it last night during the episode. Somebody, Gina D'Alfonso, she tweeted out and she said, "Someone send Eyebrows a copy of Boundaries." Because the gentleman with this on here, he doesn't know any boundaries. He just knows, I want the magician's wife.
Well, and as I predicted, I know this is going to happen later on, but as I predicted earlier, as soon as he got Arabella, Lady Pool got shunted off to the side. Because Lady Pool's like, I can never get to Arabella.
Right.
Because, you know, basically... Man with thistle down hair is like, all mines, get away.
All in mine. I've made him a trade. This is just the worst. And Moss Oak A, She is creepy, creepy. You wouldn't want to have kids with her. She's, little acorns.
The only thing that you could forgive Jonathan Strange for is if you thought someone had been wandering around outside and whatever, what you'd accept anything they said.
Right, if she was frostbitten.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You wouldn't necessarily say, this is not her. You'd say, oh, something's going on with her. But then, again, inappropriate, the man with the thistledown hair is like,
puts his spell on her. And this is maybe why it's easier to like Lady Pole than is Stephen. Lady Pole is fighting it. She keeps screaming. She keeps trying to get through. Where Stephen, poor Stephen, I think you got to like them both. But Stephen, poor Stephen's been just defeated. And he's doesn't even know what to do.
He gave up this right away. And then, but somehow, Arabella gets so enchanted. Again, Lady Pole is not into it. No. But as soon as Arabella gets enchanted, she's like, bam, all in. Hashtag awesome.
Right. And the gentleman gives her a beautiful gown and a beautiful crown of, what are the leaves or whatever. And it is just terrible. Just absolutely terrible. Ugh.
Although, again, I mean, you know, Belle's been through a lot. I don't begrudge her any happiness.
Hey, wait a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry, what?
Wait a minute. Not cool catfish.
Well, let's put it this way. Yeah. Okay, this is interesting because two entirely different things have happened here, okay?
Yes, that's very good point.
Lady Pole is half in that Lost Hope world and half in the real world.
A very good point.
So this is what's driving her crazy.
Right.
But Belle is fully now in the Lost Hope world, not physically in the real world at all.
Right. And maybe we see that the people who actually may be able to save everybody, is Honeyfoot and Segundus. Because Honeyfoot, a.k.a. Honeyfoot and Segundus, hashtag True Detective Season 3, they are putting the pieces together, Cap.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's Honeyfoot. Right. I mean, it's a good, you know, they're a good combo because Segundus can sniff out magic.
Right.
And Honeyfoot can sniff out like a well-cooked pheasant.
Honeyfoot, yeah, has no magical qualities, but he's got his little gray cells, as my boy Perot would say. And he's putting together this mystery. He's like, you know, some of this just flat-out gibberish that Lady Pole is saying, I think I've heard this gibberish before.
Well, it's funny because you early translated some of her gibberish as well because some of it has a correlation into the, I guess, the real, quote-unquote, real history of fairies.
Yeah, I'm going to actually get to that in a bit, where I'm going to read the Wikipedia entry on fairies.
The Norpedia is disturbingly quiet on fairy lore.
Right, we don't want to get into trouble. But anyway, yeah, it is crazy. We come back and we see that Jonathan is spent all night worrying over his wife. In the book, this is 3 days that he's had to put up with Moss Oak A, but she is dead. Oh, my God. That's a good dead face, too, for Moss Oak A.
Yeah, creepy. Way to go. Way to MOA it up.
And what did you take of Jonathan's reaction to this, Catfish? Because he at the end of the episode, he's talking about, I want to go mad, but he begins to go mad, it feels like, right here. Like this.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, he says it later is that, honestly, I mean, when we saw him at the beginning, it seemed to me that there were three things he cared about.
Right.
One of them was Belle. Right. The other one was drinking, and the other one was gambling.
Yeah. He gave up the other two for her.
He did. And it seemed like he was
even
happy
gave up
to.
Magic for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, guess who we never talk about happy to do anything? That's our boy, Mr. Norrell. And he's back with his friends here in
the House of Commons.
House of Commons, and he's still trying to get this book shut down.
Let's count this out. So this is scene two with the escalation of how to stop the strange magic.
He's gone
magic.
To the publisher. The publisher said, I'm going to publish it. Now he's going to the government, and he says, shut this down. And he keeps using some stuff, but what's funny is they kind of pitch a reason that he suddenly clams onto.
They do, and it's smart of him, although he doesn't grab it very fast.
No.
But it also sets up an interesting thing which we hadn't heard about before, which I think might be important later on, is that, of course, you know, when it came to the industrial age, like every age where there's great leaps forward, some people are left behind. So the people who have been left behind by the advances here are not just writing, but they're using the Raven King as sort of their inspiration.
Right.
And so anybody, so that's, makes you think, of course, now anybody aligned with the Raven King is sort of aligned, you know, it's like saying, you know, like in the 50s here, it's like, have you been to any meetings with the communists? Have you, you been to any meetings?
That's right.
Uh-oh, and, what's that?
And let's go to a footnote for our
Oh,
from
thank
our
God,
friends.
I thought I was being snatched.
Right, from our friends at the library at Hurtview. Please visit them at hurtview.wikispaces.com. And these are the Johannites, and they are Machine Breakers, an illegal organization which emerged in the laboring classes in northern England in about the year 1812, in a time of great economic hardship, mainly comprised of artisans and craftsmen whose livelihoods were threatened by the rise of industrial machinery. They banded together secretly under the name of Johannites to break machines, commit arson, and incite other rebellions. Their choice of name reflects their claim to be loyal followers of John Usklas. Technically, the Raven King was technically, in their eyes, still king of northern England, and they used his raven-in-flight banner as their own symbol. And this is based in history on a similar movement, the Luddites, and you can check them out as well. So do you like this idea that Mr. Norrell's going to use just this BS to shut down the book? He's like, hey, it'll get these people to riot more if you let Strange
publish
his book.
Well, it seems mighty inconvenient for Mr. Strange, who has been agitating for the Raven King the whole time, and now these guys who are rabble-rousing against the government are also aligning themselves with the Raven King. It's a bad time to be pro-Raven King.
Right. Now, there isn't much humor in this episode, but one funny bit of humor is when they bring this up to Norrell. They're like, haven't you been reading the papers? He's like, no, he hadn't heard of these guys at all. And we leave this scene, and Mr. Norrell goes back to his library at Hanover Square, and he's kind of bragging that he did this, like it was all his idea. And he says to Childermass, you heard of the Johannites, right? And Childermass, just like he, Childermass is the opposite. He didn't want to look dumb, so he's like, yeah, of course I've heard of them. But you know who likes this idea probably the most of everybody?
Oh.
LaSalle's.
God, what? That guy is a total dick.
Yeah, right. Let's continue. No language, catfish. So back up at the Strange residence, Arabella's brother. Remember, we saw him back in the first episode. He comes to visit.
Yeah, and Strange is like, this is a bad time. And so it's like, wait, you didn't send any notification? I guess he's not expecting this guy to show up. And then, of course, there's bad news.
Oh, it's terrible news.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Why has it, Strange has already revived some people. Why is he waiting around to revive her? We all know. In any kind of situation like this,
yeah,
the feeling is when people revive somebody and they turn out bad, they're like their answer always is they weren't freshly dead enough. So why has Strange waited?
Well, remember in the third episode about how those Italian soldiers came back, and that reminds me of hashtag sometimes dead is better.
Sometimes dead is better. yeah, Pet Cemetery. That's what I'm talking about. That's one of the ones where it's like the fresher is better, though.
Yeah, but I think, remember, Jonathan Strange spent like 3 days in that windmill with those dead Italians. And so you could understand why he may be like, there's got to be a better way to do this. Because Lady Pole didn't seem, you know, you didn't have to spit in Lady Pole's mouth, as far as he knew, to get her to not speak the language of hell.
Oh, well, that's a good point. Curious to wonder how far away they are from Norrell.
Right. Well,
because in the end, he's like, I've been waiting 7 days.
Arabella's brother Henry. He is shocked that Jonathan Strange is even suggesting this. He's like, this isn't right. You can't be doing this.
And I'm surprised he's not more strident, considering he's a man of the cloth.
Well, he says, I believe in the resurrection, you know, of Christ.
Yeah, but he just says that later. He doesn't say that now. He sort of lets him dither around until it comes to day 8, and he's like, no mas.
Well, you know, he had that back and forth. He's like, she is my flesh and blood.
Right, right.
And Jonathan Strange was like, well, she's my heart and soul.
I know. Oh.
So, you know, maybe you let Jonathan try something. I don't know.
So then we go back to Norrell, and actually, I disagree with you. I think Childermass knows everything, but he's like, yeah, I do. But what? Number one, why do you know about them? And number two, why do you care? Because he knows he doesn't care about anything except for magic.
Well, Childermass is upset with Norrell that he listens so much to Mr. LaSalle's. He calls him on it right now. And Mr. Norrell's like, hey, it was you who told me to use Drawlight and LaSalle's to spread my word of magic.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you had to trust a moron.
Hey, so here's where, once again, Mr. Norrell could have his beginning act of redemption. Childermass tells Norrell that Arabella has gone out. She went out for the snow and caught a chill and she's dead. And Mr. Norrell's like, Mr. Strange will feel that very badly.
Does he bother to even send a condolence card? No.
Oh, no. And in fact, we're going to later see that as Jonathan Strange reaches out to him, oh, he doesn't respond. Oh, just painful. So back with Jonathan Strange and Arabella, he grabs his knife and he considers doing that Italian zombie soldier stuff.
Right.
But
then he realized they'd cut some cheese on it.
No,
and then if she came back, she'd be part human, part cheese.
Sometimes dead as cheddar.
That was by the way, a Fly reference. Right. The Fly.
All right, so he writes his first letter to Mr. Norrell, and we see LaSalle's reading it. And Jonathan Strange is throwing himself down. He says, help me do for my wife what you did for Lady Paul. I'll quit magic. I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah,
I'm
not going to write nothing.
And we see Mr. Norrell in his scolding / teaching Fez. And this is where it really gets rough. You know what I mean? Ugh. And so...
Right, and this is the part where someone says, so this is what we first hear about it, and it's odd, so I'm glad we had that first part there now that you mention it, that he says, some people say that he was the one who killed his wife.
Right, yeah, the word has spread, there's rumors that he has a second wife, and of course he did have a wife and a moss oak A. And so there's a really great, fun, written bit here where Mr. Norrell's thinking, maybe I should... And LaSalle says, yeah, maybe you should use this as a way to stop publishing his book. And Childermass is like, no, Mr. Norrell was going to say, maybe I could think of a way to help. And you suddenly, there's a great close-up on Norrell's face, and you see both sides, quote-unquote, the angel and devil. He's like, well, I could help, or I could use this to stop the book. And it's, this scene is going to get ugly and
right,
terrible.
And then LaSalle pulls the old... servant card.
Oh my God. Could we please talk without the servants present? Oh.
That is cold.
Oh, cold.
Now, what's interesting here is we thought the Childermass was trying to get to the bottom of things last episode.
Right.
And maybe because of all the things that have happened this episode, seems like he's not really trying to get to the bottom of anything this episode.
Right.
He's kind of has given that up.
Well, Childermass is like, no, let's talk with the servants present. And he's trying to talk Mr. Norrell into helping. He's like, the two of you together, I'm sure you could figure out what went amiss with Lady Pole, and you could confirm that you could bring her about without madness. And Mr. Norrell, he comes down on the wrong side here, Catfish.
Well, let's put it this way. He knows there's no way to bring her back without... causing trouble. So he's in a bad position either way.
Oh, true. And Norrell's like, but here's two things. Norrell's like, you know, he has the LaSalle position. He's like, boy, as soon as his wife dies, the first thought Jonathan Strange has is of black magic. And so LaSalle is like, yes, yes, this is good. But then Norrell, this is where you have that glimmer of hope from Norrell's like, but perhaps Childermass is right. If I just explained exactly what we were talking in last episode, Catfish, he's like, if I just explained to Strange the danger of doing it, Strange wouldn't want
right,
to do it.
Right, right, right,
but
right.
But LaSalle's has to shut that down, and in the most cold way possible.
Right, but he doesn't need it anyway. I mean, he doesn't need to listen to LaSalle. He's weak.
But LaSalle, listen to this argument, which is pretty good. All the good you've done for English magic, all our work, all we have strived for, your goodness is being used against you. He's like, listen, if you could write to him if you want to, but I cannot in all conscience stand by and see you inflict such damage on your cause. I fear I can no longer be your friend.
Well, he totally just said it's either him or me. It's right. either all your friends or me.
Right, you could have, right, well, right. Catfish, not. And so we saw that in that heartbreaking scene last week where right. Mr. Norrell was going to Jonathan Strange and just trying to do anything to get him to stay.
Right.
And you could see he desperately wanted a friend, and now that, quote unquote, his only friend is Mr. LaSalle. Oh, and he has, let's be has honest, a fear to lose
Strange
him.
Wasn't really mean to Norrell last week, but he shut him down pretty clearly.
He shut him down. Yeah. And so, Catfish, it is time.
Oh, good. It's been a minute.
For my first nominee for Magician of the Week.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
And I think it's going to get... How many people were on Team LaSalle last week?
How many people were on Team LaSalle?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Mr. Norrell.
Right. Okay. That's
right?
good.
Right.
So my first nominee for Magician of the Week is Henry LaSalle.
Okay.
He may be an a-hole, and I don't mean as in... Moss Oak a-hole. He could be an a-hole, but he was able to make Childermass disappear.
Well, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
He also made Drawlight disappear.
Right, there we go. Two nominees. What a powerful magician. Everybody hashtag Team LaSalle.
He made both those guys disappear. Drawlight permanently, not from the episode, but from a respectable life.
Oh, say that again.
Respectable life.
All right. So, Jonathan Strange, he is really quite cuckoo. He's going to do it. He's tried so many times to summon a fairy. He loves Arabella. He's got to try it one more time.
Right.
One more time. He lights the candle. He says the secret words. We hear the creaking of the house settling. We see the candle flicker. But because he can't see anything, he just assumes all hope is lost. Oh, but of course, it has worked.
It has worked.
He has been able to constantly summon the gentleman with thistle down
hair. But once again, when he does it, he doesn't hear him or see him.
Right. Well, that is...
Stephen makes a good point, because man with thistle down hair is like, what a moron, he's trying to get me here. And Stephen's like, yeah, you are here.
Right, but...
Oh, no.
Right, but and Thistledown's even like, okay, all right, but listen. The only important thing is that he can only see and hear me, and I choose who can see and hear me. So obviously, when Norrell, called him that yeah. first time in episode one, he chose to let Norrell see him.
Ah.
This ever since then, he doesn't let anybody see him but Norrell, Arabella, and Steve.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so he is forced to be called,
right?
But he doesn't have to. He has to be there.
And Thistledown is a complete...
It seems like it'd kind of be boring.
Thistledown is...
He didn't talk.
God, he is the worst. He's like... I mean, he's like, here.
I thought he was your guy. I thought you loved Thistledown.
Move these pages of the book. There's no breeze. He'll get confused. Move it, Stephen. And Stephen, stand up for Stephen. Stephen doesn't do any of this bull crap, so he moves the pages.
Oh, yeah,
of
let
the
me
book.
Stand up for Stephen now. Oh, wow.
Thistledown's like watching really him trying to do... Magic is like someone sit down to eat dinner with their jacket on backwards. He's like, pinch his neck. He'll think it's a gnat.
For such an evil guy, the man with the thistle down hair is really bad at practical jokes.
Right. He's
super bad.
Very petty. Excuse me. Very petty.
He's like, oh, you know what you should do? Grab one of his nose hairs and pull it out, and he'll sneeze and he won't know why.
You know, this guy, this is like dancing dancing on somebody's grave. He got the magician's wife, and now he's just being a complete jerk. I mean, come on.
Hey, tie his shoelaces together.
Oh,
he'll fall over. Oh, that's a good one.
I saw the Three Fairy Stooges do this one time. Let's see.
Put some toilet paper on the bottom of his shoe.
And poor Steven, I don't know how to feel about it, but he doesn't do any of this.
I hate Steven.
You don't
hate him. I hate him.
Come on.
I think
just defeated. He has given up. He's a bit like Reek on our infamous show Game of Thrones.
I hate him too.
Well, okay.
So, I mean, whatevs.
All right, so this, we are just reaching the boiling point between Arabella's brother Henry and Jonathan. Jonathan Strange has said, you know, hey, I've heard the Raven King brought somebody back from the dead. It had something to do with a tree or maybe dogs. And Jonathan goes for his last attempt. He's going to do the infamous bring back the zombie Italian soldiers.
Right, but he's going to wait this time to make sure the knife is clean.
But it can't work because this is just a piece of wood. You can't bring back to life a piece of enchanted wood.
Yeah, the only thing you can do is paint it red with your blood.
Right, and this... Ah, oh, this is just painful. He's got crazy eyes. Look at
Jonathan's face. Well, they're sort of forlorn eyes. I think let's save the crazy eye description for later.
All right.
When he actually gets crazy eyes.
Well, he's definitely got circles around his eyes as he bleeds on her.
Uh-huh.
And he writes yet another letter to Mr. Norrell. Mr. Norrell will not respond. Oh God, how terrible. He's waiting for a response mm-hmm. out in the cold.
Mm-hmm.
He gets nothing. Mr. Norrell, God, he could switch to the side of the good almost at any moment here. You know what I mean?
This is his seven days teetering on the edge.
And we've reached the edge. Jonathan Strange, he's like, I've written him, and he won't respond. He won't tell me. Nothing from Norrell. And he finally decides to let go. This is heartbreaking.
Well, if Norrell showed up, do you think Norrell would know what he was faced with here?
Do you think Norrell could tell that this was a moss oak and this was not?
I don't think so.
I don't know. That's a great call. But Norrell would have helped him get to this point, which...
Again, so I'm saying, like, what would be the difference if Norrell showed up at this point? Even if he explained to him the fairies, he couldn't...
Well, how about that? At least he would be human. He would be a nice guy if he showed up. You're right. It wouldn't change anything at this point, but...
I think he already had his chance, and this was not it.
Right.
So then Strange is like, look, give me another few days to think about things. I'll figure this out.
But Henry won't have it.
No.
We see Jonathan cry, and he comes to his wife, and he's telling her, you know, you're the very reason why I picked up magic.
Yeah.
I just did it to see the smile on your
face. He was like, you are my oak. Oh, bad choice of words.
Terrible choice of words. Oh. And so this leads to
this is very sad. When he basically says everything he did for her. You know, he found a hobby for her.
Right.
And that hobby turned into the very thing that destroyed her, even though it was
his
hubris.
Doesn't realize this.
I know, but it was his hubris. Hubris.
Right. And so we see the funeral. We go out to this. I love they have this recurring shot of this cemetery. We first saw it when he and Arabella in episode one had a scene here where he was about to propose and she said, don't propose. Then later in episode one, we saw this is where Jonathan Strange buried his father.
Right.
And now he's going to the family plot near this giant old tree.
Got it.
And he's laying his wife to rest.
Oof. That is super tough. Super tough. So now at this point, you're like, well, what is he going to do? Probably nothing. You can't imagine he's going to go back to magic at this point, right?
No. He would even finish his book. We find out later he did, but oh. How terrible. But back at Starcross Hall, Stephen has shown up, and it turns out Sir Walter...
Oh, yeah, because he's such a nice guy, and he wants to help out.
Sir Walter Pole sent Stephen there, because he's like, if my wife finds out about Arabella's death, she might go crazy. So, Stephen, you...
She might go crazy? Wow. Okay, right. So she goes, and she tries to say something like... You know, it's again, Stephen's always covering. She's like, oh, I can't get to her. And he's like, yeah, because she's dead. Ahem, ahem, ahem.
Right.
Dick.
And so Honeyfoot and Segundus come to Stephen. And I don't know why they ask Stephen for permission, but they say, hey, we've noticed that Lady Pole's ramblings are like old fairy tales. We want to induce her to ramble more and see if we can put this whole mystery together.
Which is funny because Segundus knows for sure that whatever Lady Pole is laboring under, Stephen is laboring under it, maybe not in an extreme way, but in the same way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, amen. Yeah, it's tough. And Stephen, why does he say no? Why does he not encourage them? Is he just given up? He's given up. That's why I feel sympathy for Stephen. He's complicit in some of these terrible acts, but it's like he's given up. Been years under the gentleman with thistle
down
here.
And the reason why I don't like him is because, again, here, he's acting like a dick.
You know, well, how about this? He's always afraid it could get worse.
Well, how could it get much worse?
Well, let's be honest. It could get much worse. At least he's got a bit of himself still. Arabella doesn't have any of herself anymore.
Yeah. Well, Lady Pole's barely hanging on. But no. she's hung on a lot longer than I predicted she would.
You really don't remember the book, too.
I really do not remember the book that well.
All right. Oops. Okay. So let's jump ahead here. And when we come back from commercial break, and the commercials in this episode really were at painful times for me. But we see that Jonathan Strange is coming back to his London house, and he's finished the first volume of his novel, The History of Magic.
Wow. You know, everyone's just talking about history, like they're the only ones who knows the history. I'd say magic, strange style. Or I'd call it strange
So Sir Walter Pole comes, and this was a bit of dark humor. Jonathan Strange is like, I would like you to give this etching of the King's Road to your wife. I think it'll help her. And Walter Pole looks at this painting, which is it's not
creepy.
Right, he's like, oh, that'll
it's my style.
Comfort her.
It's kind of Escher. I love Escher. Right.
And so, of course, Walter Pole has heard about, you know, the Raven King and how it's stirring these riots up north. And he sees these paintings and he realizes that Strange is continuing on with magic in his book.
Yeah. And also Strange says, listen, this isn't the end, right? Because like we haven't gone far enough, right? Oh, we're doing these little piddly little things. And we know that magic was super powerful back in the past, right?
Yeah.
And we're just doing these little flashes, they're parlor games, really. It's really no better than using the magic to wash clothes, according to Strange.
Draw light was right. There are a couple of funny things in here. One is that Sir Walter Pole tells Strange, he's like, gosh, Norrell goes crazy every time he hears mention of your book. And that brings the biggest smile to Jonathan's face. He's like, you know, Norrell's in agony every time you mention your book. And Strange is like, agony? But he says it with this just insane grin on
Delicious.
His face. And then, of course, when he's talking about what magic have we done, you know, we've done piddlywink magic. We've done nothing. What is brought up again but the sea beacons?
The sea beacons. And we find out here that they're still not done.
Oh, man.
It still has not completed them. I'm still not sure what the sea beacons are supposed to do, but whatever they're supposed to do, they ain't doing it.
Let me ask you this.
Talk to
Catfish,
me.
Catfish, since you don't remember the book, will the sea beacons be finished, yes or no?
Well, I mean,
that's the end of the book. And then the sea beacons were completed. The end.
Unless Napoleon comes back for a third time, I can't see why the sea beacons actually matter, for God's sakes.
Let's do it.
Finally, they're complete. Okay, sure.
I did think this scene takes a bit of a cold turn, and I thought it was a bit cold of Strange, you know, when he gets so upset. He's like, Norrell has poisoned your mind to the Raisin King. He's literally poisoned. He's done everything. He's like, have you not thought of your wife, sir? Have you not thought of why she's gone mad? And even though Jonathan's right, I thought it was a bit cold to bring up this poor guy's crazy wife.
Well, you know what? He's super peed right now. Super peed.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, you know, because he's been, this whole time, everyone stopped him at every turn. And again, we go back to the beginning. This could have been a two-part show if Norrell just said, listen, fairies are bad. Here's what I did. It's bad news. That's bad, horrible juju.
It would have been a two episode. It would have been a one episode.
good work.
And that's why we don't do magic anymore.
The end.
So back at Starcross Hall, they're gonna encourage Lady Pole to tell her crazy tales. Mm-hmm. And Stephen, once again, it's hard to stay on his team when he's like, listen, Arabella Strange doesn't know what's going on with her. She's happy.
And
happy?
And yet you still are on Stephen's team.
He's like, look, we should be thankful. We've still got each other. Like, what? And even Lady Pole's right. She's like, Stephen, he's poisoned your mind.
There's a lot of mind poisoning going on here.
Right, a lot of mind poisoning. Maybe that should be my second nominee for Magician of the Week.
Uh-huh.
The gentleman with thistle down hair for excellent mind poisoning. My second nominee. Because he's succeeded. It is very successful.
Okay.
And so, They encourage, they Segundus asks Lady Pole, he says, tell me what is most troubling you. And she starts her rambling, her craziness. She mentions good old Cole Tom Blue.
Right, and Honeyfoot's like, hold on, I can find this.
He must know all these little folktales very well. Right.
He wrote some of them down because he loves them.
Right, and so he's beginning to put it together. He's beginning to put it together. And is
and what I love is that he says, no, you're being too specific. And I'm like, was she being too specific? And then when she goes on, it's like, it feels like she's being just as specific as she was before.
No. But I think Honeyfoot is right. He's like, when she tries to tell it directly, rather than saying, Arabella Strange has been taken to Lost Hope, the Fairy Kingdom. Like if she were to say, my friend is in trouble. You know, like if there's a way you can kind of hedge around it, maybe she won't go so far. Right. At least that's what I took him to mean. But of course, yeah, she's just as crazy as always. And there is a...
What's that?
Knock at the door.
Oh, boy.
And it's great that this is intercut. This is a wonderfully written, wonderfully
edited show. It is, because you know what it makes me wonder? No one is paying attention to it.
No,
except
to the knocking
for Steven
at the door,
and
right.
her. So you wonder, is this happening for realsies or what?
Oh, no. Right, yeah. You're always kind of in this. As a viewer,
right,
you're a bit
really
between.
It's because Segundus and Honeyfoot are like, they're on the warpath here, so they're not really paying attention to the knock, but it's happening in for real life. And they figure out that she's talking about a story from the point of view of the fairies.
Right, a fairy tale from the point of view of the fairies, so it's a human tale. Did you like that twist, Catfish?
I did like that twist.
But how will this be able to help them solve the mystery?
Well, I don't want to ruin it for anyone else.
Okay. Do you remember that part?
No, but I have some suppositions.
Okay. All right.
So they show up, and you know what I'm surprised at?
What?
I thought that this was madhouse for one. Madhouse for one.
We now have double occupancy.
More room at the inn.
They're going to have to hire some help to take care
they
of
might have
all
to.
The patients, because who
they
is
might have to.
Who has shown up? We had heard earlier in the episode that some of those people at the House of Commons were talking about how there was a madman in the north talking about the return of the Raven
and
King.
We knew who that was.
Yeah,
our
I
old
wonder
boy Vinculus.
Who that could be. And sure enough, Vinculus, this actor, Paul Kay, another great actor.
Right, who showed up in the second episode of Humans.
Right, I'm going to say this guy has got it down. This guy doesn't have to. If there's a part that calls for somebody crazy, he is great. And so, wait, there is yet another bit of prophecy here. Now, I want you to pay attention, folks. He looks at Segundus and he says, I've met you before.
Right.
Now, listeners, I want you to see if you can figure out when Vinculus has met
Vinculus.
Segundus before.
Mm.
And then he says to Stephen, he says, the rain shall make a door for me, and I shall go through it. Who do you think he's talking about there, the catfish?
I think he's talking about the Mr. Strange.
No!
No?
The Raven King.
Oh, the Raven
King. Well, maybe. I don't know. You're right, maybe.
All right.
But he is nuts. In fact, he likes getting wet.
Right? He loves laughing and pointing at people.
Right. When you laugh at your own jokes, it's not so good.
Yeah. I know. Okay.
All right, so Sir Walter Pole.
So
is
this scene number four about the book?
He doesn't know what to do, so he brings this drawing of the Raven Kings to Mr. Norrell. And LaSalle's is like, hey, I've talked to my man at Murray's Publishing House. We can't stop it that way. And this...
Right, and Norrell's like, well, I want my magic cord. I want to be able to accuse people of stuff.
Magic Court, da-da-da. This week on Magic Court, da-da-da.
Exactly,
the plaintiff says that the defendant has used disreputable magic. This is a great, I wonder if this is foreshadowing. Childermass, he's begging Norrell to quit the feud. He's like, you've got to stop this Philly feud. It may not end well for either of you guys.
Right, good point. Childermass, always a smart guy. LaSalle, always just a DB.
Team LaSalle, hey, wait. And then we have, yet another commercial. Oh,
boo.
People, you're gonna want to, and nobody. Let me say, if you buy the Blu-ray DVD, I want to buy it and give it out to friends and family. This show has just been great. Admittedly, I haven't seen seven, so I don't know if it stuck the landing. But this show is just great, and you won't have to suffer through another ad for the Graham Norton show. As wonderful as it is,
Graham Norton,
the biggest name in British television. And so did you like that we cut from this and we see Childermass is doing some magic. He's become a shadow.
Oh, I thought he'd become a shrubbery.
So Jonathan Strange, though, he's like Mr. Segundus. He can tell when there's magic nearby, and he calls out Childermass. And he keeps calling Childermass. He's like, you know, does your boss know that you do magic? And I think Childermass doesn't really care, do you?
No, but it's interesting. This is a really interesting scene because mm-hmm. it's weird the way that it turns out. In that Childermass seems to believe that it doesn't really matter who's right and who's wrong, as long as there's one person who's right and one person who's wrong. He doesn't care who he is.
Well, would you believe that he thinks it's a healthy debate? He doesn't say it. I'm kind of putting thoughts into Childermass's head.
Yeah, I guess that is what he's
saying.
Maybe his
thought process.
And the interesting thing is the difference between him and Norrell is that, yes, that he thinks it's a healthy debate, and it is one that should stay healthy. In other words, there should be both sides should have their feelings put about.
Well, he saw that picture that Sir Walter Pole brought of the King's Road, and he loved it. He's looking at more drawings.
Well, we know he likes art because he stole that nice stitching that Lady Pole did.
Tapestry.
He's a big art fan. You look in his his single room there. He's got art all over the
right,
walls.
Right on his Fender Fairy Tinder page. He's art appreciation.
Exactly. Exactly. So Strange just gives it up. Hey, you want to go
on the
roads?
This is how you
Boom,
enter the King's Roads.
Do it.
He's
do
like,
it.
You do these two spells. That's how you enter through the mirrors.
And then he does say an interesting thing, which made me think of something else, where Strange says they were there all the time, but something has recently opened them, which I just thought no one knew how to get through them.
That's the way I took it, too.
But I think what he's saying now is they've been opened. Because, I mean, we're left to infer that they're open because the man with the thistle down hair has sort of been called, and so they've been open because of that.
Or have they been open because you know who is coming?
Well, I think it's all part of the thing. I mean, it almost feels like, the Raven King needed someone to prepare the way for him, that there needed to be this hubbub and to-do.
Now, Childermass calls Jonathan Strange a bad pupil. He'd like, I'd be even a worse pupil than you. Was Jonathan Strange a bad pupil, Catfish?
Yeah, no, I disagree that he was a bad one. He's right. You can ask questions. And Childermass doesn't go, oh, you know what, you're right. He just ignores his excuse. I tell you what,
right.
Let's make a deal.
Well, I would say that at a certain point, if your teacher keeps saying, we shouldn't study that, that's not important, leave that alone, maybe it is a bad pupil to ignore their teacher.
But there can also be a bad teacher because just like when you're teaching a child, you have to explain things. You can't just say, don't go in there. It's like, don't go in there because there's a pit in the middle of the floor and you'll fall 50 feet to your death.
Listen, when I have Bubba Jr., it's going to be, Bubba, can I go in there? Don't go in there. But, no buts, bad pupil, Nora Light, School of Magic.
Wow.
Okay, and so everything was good. Childermass and Strange are shaking hands, saying, all right, we're going to be friends, and everything seems like it's okay. I saw some people on Twitter saying, oh, wouldn't it be great if these two could team together? Twas not
team
to be,
up.
Though. Team up. But so anyway, Strange is talking about how he's going to publish his book, and Childermass shouldn't have said anything. He's just like, heads up, Mr. Norrell's going to make sure you can't publish your book. And that just snaps. And this is where the episode really takes off for me. There isn't much time left. But
right.
Strange gets, all this stuff he's been holding in, all this anger. He's like, God damn Norrell, God damn him. He's like, I wrote to him. What have I ever done for him, Childermass? What did I do to him apart from be frank and pleasant? And this is what you said. Even his diss of his book, well, really wasn't that bad. He's like, this book is a tribute to my wife. He jumps through the mirror and, oh, hell yeah, it is on. Let's get ready to rumble!
He comes out, and I love it. He is just incensed.
I'm incensed, too. Let's get it on.
I know, he is just throwing stuff all over, and there's your boy LaSalle.
Team LaSalle, run away.
Scared.
Wouldn't you be? How come he's not using magic here? That's one thing I didn't understand. Like maybe turn LaSalle into a frog or something.
You would love that.
No way.
No, sometimes you like to get your hands on somebody, and he's very earthy with his magic anyway. So first he's going to start with his hands.
And even LaSalle's like, hey, Mr. Strange, have you not considered the hurt you've done to him? And Strange is like, just, I wrote to him to help me get my wife back. He didn't even reply. And then he sees that Norrell is actually there. What was the magic? Why won't you tell me?
Right? And then, you know, Norrell just goes back upstairs. He's like, I'm going to let my boys handle this.
And I love the music in this scene because it is like, you know, it's...
Oh, maybe we'll hear more from Double M on this.
Well, he recorded his stuff before he saw this episode. But this is just great.
Damn it.
Because Strange is totally unhinged. And I love the smile he gets as he's being thrown out of the house. He goes, I get it. I know why. I know why you won't tell me. And once again, even outside, you know how you were always like, let's use magic to mess up...
Yeah, no, he
the
just
Duke,
like...
The Duke of Wellington, when he pisses off. Strange doesn't use magic. He uses the old kid trick. Let's throw rocks right, in this right, guy's right. house.
And then the cops come, and I you know, people don't like it when we use current events here.
No,
but
they don't.
The guy does seem to be restrained, and the one dude decides this is a perfect time to just keep punching him in the stomach.
That reminds me of the great song by MWA.
MWA.
Magicians with Attitude.
Oh, man. Yeah, right. When they said,
disrespect the police.
Darn those constables.
And so Strange has been thrown.
Oh, and who do we see in the jail?
Oh, amazing. What a great coincidence. Man. Name who it is, Catfish.
It is Mr. Drawlight.
Prisoner 47, Christopher Drawlight.
Well, I will say this. He seems to be in a prison. He seems to be in a cell with him and some ladies, so maybe they're playing some cards. Obviously, let's be clear. But no, seriously, you can see he's not in
women?
The cell by himself.
No, there are other people. I didn't see there were women.
Yeah, there was a woman in this jail with him. And I will say
sure?
this. While you're looking
hold
to
on,
see, I'll
we're
say
gonna,
this.
We're going to look at this.
Is okay. that obviously, in these days, there was like, even though this is a crappy jail cell, it's probably the rich people jail cell. And then there's a poor people jail cell where it's just horrific. But again, when you are in the cell.
Oh, there is a woman in. Wait a minute. Do you see who the woman is in there, Catfish, with him?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
It's the lady who wanted to pay Jonathan Strange to kill her husband and her mother-in-law.
Oh, my God. This is the greatest thing ever. The greatest Easter egg. I couldn't have told.
That is nice.
I could not have told unless I paused it. Oh my.
That is a super good catch. I will say this.
It's Mrs. Bulworth. Hold on.
Mrs. Bulworth,
another nominee for Magician of the Week. She got herself thrown in a co-ed prison. Mrs. Bulworth, my third nominee.
And now that Drawlight started looking rugged, you know, he's kind of brawny now.
I think Drawlight wouldn't want to be locked up in there with her. She's the one who he was ripping off one
she's
of the
people. She's got kind of a salty tongue. I don't know.
Oh my God, that is great. That moves this episode to a 9.5. Oh, so good. All right, so we see Grant, the fellow soldier, the good guy soldier, come in, and he is trying to, you know, even Wellington, you know, they all want to help
dude.
Strange. They
he's
know Strange
dude,
is our boy.
And he wants to help him out.
This is where if
they're
it,
going to
if it hadn't gone
try him for murder by witchcraft.
If they can find
like,
a law, if they can find a law,
which is
work.
Like, hold on, okay, I understand. I broke in the dude's house and I threatened him, but what? Who is he peed off here?
Oh well, all the wrong people.
All right,
and so Strange. He's like, look, he's tried to do it a million times. This is the time. He goes, I know I summoned a fairy at Windsor Castle. I've just got to get this fairy. I just couldn't see him. Whatever I do, nothing seems to work. And this is where he's putting the pieces together. And this is also where, we could be really turning to a whole lot of trouble. He's like, why could the person I was with see him and I couldn't? And Grant is like, well, was he a magician? He's like, no, he wasn't a magician.
You know,
he was... Man.
Let me just say this.
Yeah.
I would have gone through a few other things first. I would have gone, okay, well, let's see, he's playing the piano. Let me try playing the piano. He had a beard. He had a long beard. Let me try a beard. Oh, he was in a nice robe.
Right.
Let me wear
maybe
a robe.
Maybe I'd give myself blindness because he was blind.
He goes right to being nuts.
Right. And so,
even Drawlight knows that that's
Drawlight
that's,
hears
that's a
this
bad
and
idea.
He's like,
I'm in a prison cell.
Can I be
woman.
Transferred to a different wing of the prison, please?
No, he's like, I'm glad I'm in the cell with the woman who wants to kill everybody she knows rather than him. Right. So then they do a really cool thing here, of course, where Strange is looking, and we do know that it's not just windows, but any sort of
mirrors,
standing water, right? Not just
anything
mirrors,
with a reflection.
With a reflection. So he's like, I'm going to become a magician. I'm going to do it now. And then they're like, the guy's like, all right, open the door, open the door.
Right, this is crazy.
Opens the door.
Right.
And what? And who's there?
Squadoosh.
Nobody. Just a few rats.
Oh, my Lord.
But those are unseen. Just picture those. There are rats in there. There has to be rats.
Jonathan Strange, he was talking to himself. He's like, how can I become mad? Would wandering the woods drive me mad?
Wow.
And this, we have ended every episode, Catfish, all first four,
right,
on Mr. Neural. In this episode, we end instead on Grant as his face. But we end every episode pretty much the same way with somebody looking and thinking to themselves,
oh, shit.
this isn't good. Oh, my goodness gracious. And so that, you know, it's kind of repetitive, you know, maybe predictable. Do you think somebody's going to end next week?
You know what
week?
It is? Is?
Are they going to end the next two episodes with somebody going, uh-oh,
no, you know what it is?
Good.
The people are like waiting to get the script. It's like this. It's like the live from New York on Saturday night. You go, right. Who gets to do the end bit?
Right, the end look of, oh, crap, it's all gone to hell.
Yeah.
And so that ends chapter 5, Arabella. Once again, Catfish, you're solid with an 8. It was slow. It did have a middle, slow, sad section. But hopefully you're like me. I loved this ending.
Oh, yeah. No, this was great. This was great. I did love it. It was a little slow at points. Maybe I took some points off just because I was super sad about Arabella, and that's got nothing to do with the episode. It just has to do with the way it affected me emotionally. But still, this is a bang-up show, and we only have 2 episodes left. There's a lot to get to in 2 episodes, I guess.
There sure is.
Even though I forget.
All right, now, Catfish, I'm going to go back to the book. I don't want to spoil. I'm not going to spoil anything.
Oh no!
For people who want to read this novel after they see this wonderful miniseries,
right? Especially if they have a hard time getting.
But
asleep.
We've already kind of talked about how the first third of the book. This is one book, but it's divided into 3 volumes. The first volume is entitled what? Of course, but Mr. Neural. Volume 2 is entitled Jonathan Strange.
Got it.
Now, we just did the last chapter. This episode was titled Chapter 5, Arabella. And sure enough, in the novel, it's Chapter 44 is titled Arabella.
Got it.
And that's on page 491 that chapter begins.
Yeah.
So we've done about 500 pages over 5 episodes.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember what the third volume is titled, Catfish?
Is it titled Uh-Oh?
Yes, a bit, but in other words, that is probably the implication we can take from the title. But the actual title of the third volume, the final third of the book, is John Usklask.
Ruh-roh.
The name the Raven King
Raven
gave
King.
Himself.
Okay.
Uh-oh. And so, once again, I don't want to spoil. I don't want to get people's hopes up. You know, I think if you like the series, you'll like it so far. Just for me personally.
Got it.
Next week's episode, and specifically actually the beginning of next week's episode, of the 6 I've seen, oh man.
Something to look forward to next week.
All right, and next week's episode is entitled...
Tell me what it's called.
Okay, now do you remember this from our footnote from a week ago, Catfish? Next week's episode is entitled The Black Tower. Yes, that's uh-oh works. Uh-oh is the subtitle. It is the footnote. It's like the footnote to the episode should be uh-oh.
So, now, okay, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, this is the point where usually by this point, you've nominated at least 3 or 4 people for your Magician of the Week.
I have. I've nominated 3. Do you have a nominee?
I don't like to spoil it for the viewers. Okay. I just tell them at the end who my Magician of the Week is.
Well, we're going to get to all our listeners' feedback. We're going to get to our new iTunes review.
Whoa.
And we're going to get to our Magicians of the Week. But right now, let's go to our special guest. It's a guy I like to call Double M, Matt Murdock.
How
from
did I forget
Podcast
that again?
Winterfell. As he's guys, you are really going to enjoy this. This is a segment on the music of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Baba and Catfish. Is that the way I'm supposed to say that? Anyway, this is Matt, and I hope you know that a lot of us are enjoying your reviews of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. I think that this series is one of the funnest times I've had in summertime television. And I know that the three of us have communicated a little bit over Twitter about the music in Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, and how you guys have compared it a little bit to the Harry Potter thing. And I would actually say that musically speaking, that's fairly close, because John Williams in the original score, I think it was John Williams, did a lot of things that were very conventional for what we think of as magic in terms of scoring the magical side of things. And I feel like the composers here have done so as well. And there's two key elements that I want to focus on in terms of magic and why certain musical things sound magical or help us to get into that magical frame. And the two key things that always seem to ring through as being kind of magical to us as viewers are the instrumentation that is used and the meter in which it is placed, the time signature. Now, as far as the instrumentation goes, bell percussion is one of those things that really draws your attention and places you into kind of an otherworldly place, a magical place. I'm talking about uses of glockenspiel, for instance, or even sometimes harp, if plucked or if used properly, can create a magical kind of experience. And we hear harp used a lot in this show, and we hear glockenspiel used a lot in this show during magical portions of the episodes. Now, as far as time signature goes, three-quarter time, or the waltz time, is often associated with magical things. And I think if you go back to the romantic period of composition, and I'm talking like Tchaikovsky, Wagner, those kind of composers, that was where it was really established, because we started to get these huge ballets and operas and tales of magical places where composers needed to convey something magical happening or whatever. As far as instrumentation goes, I can certainly cite the Sugar Plum Fairy in Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker. Listen to the instrument that is playing the main melody at the top of that. And, of course, it's a sugar plum fairy that's kind of magical, right? Because Clara's in a different place. And the waltz time is often associated with various ballets and various operas where magical things are happening within those contexts. I can't really cite one right off the top of my head, but I know that I've heard it in those kind of things. So I thought what we would do is look at some of these clips, at least in the first two episodes, and decide if my theory holds up. And I'm going to present you the very opening scene from the pilot episode as an example, because when Segundus is trying to do magic, we hear a lot of glockenspiel and harp. And then when he goes outside and we see Childermas, and then Childermas is giving the narrative about the whole thing about magic and how it has been away from the society, we have moved into a waltz-type tempo. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Or something similar to that speed. I'm not sure if I have the speed exactly right, but take a listen to this first clip that I have for you.
Ah! occurs to you. Some years ago, there was in the city of York a society of magicians.
So again, you have the glockenspiel and the harp while Segundus is trying to give us magic, and then you have that waltz tempo as we get more into the introduction of what is happening in England by Childermas. Now, you might say, well, there's some times where we don't get either of those really with Jonathan Strange in this first episode, but that is because in this first episode, there is a good portion of the episode where Jonathan Strange doesn't even know that he's a magician, right? And so our introduction to him, there's no glockenspiel present. There's no three-quarter time present. Instead, we get this kind of almost Lone Ranger-y kind of da-da-dun, which reminds you of horse galloping. It was very cute of the composers to put that in there. But unlike our introduction to Mr. Norrell, because remember when Segundus and Honeyfoot find Norrell at his home at Hertfew Abbey, what we find is basically a restatement of what we heard at the beginning. There's a waltz theme presented as Childermas is leading them through to Norrell's library, and there's glockenspiels being played when they first walk in there. So it's essentially all of those magical elements are there for Norrell because he's already a practicing, what is it, a tolerable, practical magician. So with Strange, there is no such notion. And here is this clip to show you that there's no glockenspiel or three-quarter time present. Instead, it is 4/4 time.
Well, if that is how the first magician behaves, I dare not think what the second will be like.
The Lord be with you.
Yes, sir.
Well done, Henry.
You're using your voice much better. More authority.
Now, here is something that I love what the composers did. When Jonathan Strange performs magic for the first time, you still have the staccato string, that da-da-dun, thing going on. But it changes to three-quarter time as he's performing magic for the first time. Take a listen.
Then I draw a circle on the mirror, like this. And then I quarter the circle.
Jonathan, where did you get this nonsense?
From the man under the hedge. Henry, do at least
Henry,
tight.
That is not your ceiling.
So that motif, that's what we call those kind of little rhythmic or melodic elements that repeat over and over, that da-da-dun, da-da-dun, that is still retaining part of Jonathan Strange's character that we know him as in the first time we meet him. And yet it's transitioning into the fact that he can perform magic by using that motif over a 3/4 time signature as opposed to a 4/4 time signature. So that is excellent. And then finally, I want to go to the Lady Pole episode. That's episode 2, when Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell speak or are introduced for the first time, and Jonathan Strange performs a little magic trick with placing the paper in the mirror and the reflection out in our world. I love the fact that as he performs it, you get the Glockenspiel stuff. And then when him and Norrell start talking about magic, we go into a 3/4 waltz.
Mr. Norrell,
let the man do his trick, sir.
Nothing would give me greater pleasure. This is one of my own spells.
I do understand what you mean. I have taken the liberty of drawing up a plan of study for the next...
So, again, in conclusion, the use of bell-type percussion or harps as instrumentation and the use of the 3/4 time signature is what gives us a magical feel, what helps give us a magical feel, and it's something that's been done for, almost 200 years now, I guess? Well, 150 years, let's say 150 years for sure. It's something that's been done often by composers in Western composition. Eastern composition is a whole different thing, of course. But what we most associate film scoring with, of course, is Western composition. So I hope I've demonstrated my theory correct in a way that the music can add just as much to the magical feel of a film as any other element of it. And thanks for taking the time to listen to this, guys. Bye.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Double M. That is wonderful. And I have to be honest, because I love the music so much at that very last scene where Strange was attacking Norrell in his house, I kind of am, you know, Matt, I may have to beg you to do some more of this stuff.
It was still value added, though.
True. So, Catfish, we have more members to add into our respectable magician
club. Oh, good.
These are people who, once again, who tweeted us with the hashtag Lost Hope Podcast and or they give us iTunes reviews. They are the people we call respectable magicians. So let's bring them up real quick. Our first new member of the Respectable Magician Club is Mark West. He's at westmarkwest713. We also have a new respectable magician called the Faceless Author, who's at Faceless Author. We have Jane Gastineau, who's, sure enough, at Jane Gastineau. Matt Papa, who's at Matthew Papa 2, the number 2. We have at Strange Fan 3. That's a great name. And I also have somebody called Boo A-C. That's Boo A-C. And they have a Twitter handle that's a bit difficult. You ready? It is at Weird Butt Hat S-O-K.
So, love it.
Hat suck.
Love it.
So Weird Butt H-A-T-S-O-K. So that is Boo AC, new members of the Respectable Magicians Club.
Thank God they're respectable.
We also have a final new member from the iTunes store. And do you want to read our new iTunes review, Catfish?
I will. And then I'd love to read a tweet out we got just a few hours ago.
All right. Well, read this new iTunes review. Okay. Then let's get to everybody's tweets.
JP Soso says,
yeah,
this podcast is delightfully enchanting.
Ooh, Five stars. Thank you so much, JP.
I am a non-book reader who loves this series. Oh, I watch it on Saturday for the experience and again on Sunday for the details.
Oh, heck yeah. Whoa. All right.
Then I eagerly download your podcast on Monday.
Thank you.
Your recaps and footnotes are presented with true wit and insight and help me to experience the episode again in an entirely new way.
Ooh.
Kudos to Bub and Catfish for a very tolerable, practical, and thoroughly enjoyable podcast.
Wow. Thank you so much. So by giving us that iTunes review, you've joined the Respectable Magicians Club and will be eligible to win whatever prizes we get, plus the infamous footnote bell. Now, Catfish, let's get to some of these great tweets we've got. Why don't you read the first one?
All right. This one is from our old friend, our previously respectable magician, at Hey Ref.
Hey Ref, yeah.
Sean Gragan.
Love him.
He says, am I the only one seeing parallel between LaSalle's treatment of Draw Light and BBC America treatment of hashtag Lost Hope Podcast?
Now hold on.
Well, that's a Hey Ref did not know
before
this. And we didn't really tweet it out, kind of saved it as a surprise for this.
We should wait until we see if we actually get anything for it.
That's true. We'll hold on to it. But for now, Hey Ref, we have been promised some goodies. Yeah. But thank you for looking out.
Excellent, excellent. Why don't you read this next tweet from our new member of this Respectable Magician Club, Strange Fan.
That's from at Strange Fan 3.
Yeah.
Finished the miniseries and am 3 episodes into hashtag Lost Hope Podcast.
Awesome.
But isn't the style supposed to be Georgian, not Victorian? Ooh, now, this is an interesting question.
That is a great question.
No, but because here's what I will say. The funny thing is I read about this somewhere else.
Okay.
Is that I believe that it's set in the Georgian period, but it's written as if it was written in the Victorian period. In other words, the Georgian period is when it's set.
Right.
But it would have been like it was written 30 years later in the Victorian period. That's what I remember from reading about this like 5 weeks ago, and I was going to bring it up, but then I thought,
That is a great question. Let me also say, I would say that when you look at some of their London residences for Strange and Norrell, those are kind of, if I understand correctly, those are Georgian kind of townhomes and houses. And
okay.
Stuff, I believe. Also, listen, we got so many tweets. Let me read some from our wonderful member of the Respectable Magic Club, Maggie, who's at Les Etoiles 6. And let me spell that out. pronounced it just bad.
No, I'm sure I said it wrong as well, but at least I said it with a little bit more panache.
All right, let's hear you try to say it.
L'Etoile.
6. I like that. Okay. Anyway, it's at L'Etoiles 6. And she sent us a couple. She gave tonight's episode 9.6 convenient puddles out of 10. She also said when she saw Dry Light in the prison, she was very excited. And she said, can Strange be Magician of the Week? Disappearing through puddles and mirrors, Strange is her nominee for Magician of the Week.
But what she doesn't know is, because when he went through that puddle and there was a rat in that puddle, when he came out on the other side, he had whiskers.
Oh, no. I was going to say, when he went through that puddle, he came out all wet. Catfish, why don't you read these two tweets from Double M and Podcast Winterfell?
All right. Double M at Musical Concepts. Double M Matt Murdoch says, whoa, 9 out of 10 fairy cons. My heart broke for Strange, but worried he's descending into madness.
Uh-oh.
But I think that's intentional. He wants to.
Yeah, now.
Podcast Winterfell at Winterfell Pod says, by the way, hashtag Team Segundus, Honeyfoot, and Lady Pole. Maybe hashtag Team Childermas too. Both hashtag Strange and Norrell are now bad, in my opinion.
Oh, wow. Maybe he'll be willing to join me in Team LaSalle. Our good friend Tracy, that's Tracy with 2 E's at the end, and no Y, she's at Tracy 2 E-Z. And she gave a couple of goes. She said, this was a sad episode of Strange and Norrell, but thanks to Catfish, she kept giggling at all the silly pants. So last week, Catfish, you ruined the episode for
her. That's hashtag camel toe.
Tracy also said it was weird rooting for the Redcoats. Hashtag America. thank you very much, Tracy. My good friend who I'm doing this Go Set a Watchman podcast with Natasha, who's at La Ren Soul. That's LaRenSoul. She says it takes death and madness to shine light on the truth. So it took Arabella's death and a bit of madness for Strange to get to the bottom of it.
Okay.
Pretty, pretty good. Why don't you read one from Matthew Papa?
Oh, Matt Papa at Matthew Papa 2 says, I say draw light for Magician of the Week because he magically found a way to appear in this episode.
Oh, that is pretty good.
Nice.
He shouldn't have.
And our old friend Susan Stacy at Black Eyed Lily gave us a couple tweets.
Oh, yeah.
She said, Drawlight is quite the dandy in this photo.
Yeah, there was a photo I hashtagged out of the pants that you're so fond of, Catfish.
Nice. And then she says, though, to be accurate, Drawlight is really a fop rather than a dandy,
ooh,
according to Brummel.
Well, how would you just define a dandy or a fop?
Fop? Oh, boy. I would say this. A dandy is someone who is, I would think, would be richer. He's got a lot of finery. He's kind of a moron, and all he cares about is the way he looks. Now, a fop is somebody who's sucking up to others. So that's the way I define fop versus dandy. They're very close, though.
So he's kind of got all bases covered.
But he is more. But a fop, again, does. The difference is, I think of the dandy would be someone who doesn't have to suck up to others because he's got a lot of money. And the fop is someone who has to suck up because he's not set.
So maybe LaSalle's then is the dandy.
It could be. Although, again, he took his money from. Someone who's dandy is a little bit more frivolous. Example, if he hadn't found a career and just kept drinking and gambling, then Jonathan Strange would have been a dandy, but never a fop.
Right. Okay, do we have any other social media things we want to give a shout out to, Catfish?
Our good old friend Glenn Ewing at Glenn Ewing says, so I'm just going to buy the show on Amazon. It's really good. Plus, I want to keep listening to hashtag New Hope.
Oh, we love Glenn Ewing. He's a bigger Star Wars fan than I am, and that's pretty hard. And he does great tweets on that.
Yeah, he was having problems with his cable setup.
Yeah, some people actually tweeted at me and said, "Hey, I can only see the first three episodes on demand. How do I get the fourth?" And I'm trying to find out this stuff, people. But really, call your cable provider, your content provider, and they may be able to help you a bit more. I certainly assume you can find it on iTunes, and BBC America wants people to watch this show. So they are doing a great job tweeting and trying to get the word out themselves. And so they want people to see it.
And our friend Mark West at Mark West 713 says, wonderful as ever. One needs doing dedicated to Jay Strange to the tune, Can I Play With Madness?
Do you know the song, Can I Play With Madness?
I don't, and I'm still trying to figure out what that sentence means. One needs doing dedicated. I'm a little confused, but since there's a big support, why don't you sing the song?
One needs madness, two need each other, three is the magic number, baby. Said
okay. Is that good? I don't know whether it's good or bad, but
it certainly happened.
I know about that. Right. So that's pretty much what we have for this week.
All right. Hey, guys, because we're going to be giving away all the wonderful gifts we can give away in episode 7. That means you've got 2 weeks, 2 weeks to tweet hashtag Lost Hope Podcast or to give us an iTunes review or a review on Stitcher. All right, Catfish, let's end this episode the way we end every episode with our Magician of the Week.
Okay, all right. We've got three nominees from you. What are they?
Well, my first nominee was Mr. LaSalle's for being able to make Children Mass disappear from the room.
Right? And you forgot that he made Drawlight disappear from...
That was last week. Okay, this week, that's what he did.
Okay.
My second nominee...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my second nominee was the gentleman with thistle down here for being able to poison minds like Steven. Mm-hmm. That was great magic. Mm-hmm. And my third nominee was Mrs. Bulworth for only being able to be seen in a very half a second... In the prison cell with Drawlight.
But
so
still delighting you.
My three nominees for Magician.
All right, who wins?
Well, just because it was the most magical thing just now finding out she was in the episode, I'm giving it to Mrs. Bulworth.
She's your Magician of the Week.
My Magician of the Week. Sorry, Team LaSalle. We had to give it to her. That was incredible, Catfish. I'm glad you caught that. That really, that bumped it up to a 9.5 for me.
My magician of the week is Steven.
Steven!
Somehow he's cast a spell on you, and somehow you don't believe that he is the total and complete dick that he is.
I know.
You're still hashtag Team Steven, and he's horrible.
You know what? I wish he would break out of his funk. And let me say, they're cutting some of his stories from the book. He has this quasi-romance in the novel that's very interesting. But yeah, Steven, he's just given up.
He's my magician of the week.
Okay.
He has ensorcelled you.
Listeners, it's not too late to tweet at us and tell us your magician of the week or your ratings. We want to hear from everybody, and we certainly want to get you to be eligible to win some of these great, we hope, prizes we're going to receive.
Cross fingers.
All right, so please, how do people contact us, Catfish?
And they can hit me up at CJGman67.
Or you can reach me, Bubba. I'm at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter. Tonight, literally, in just an hour, we're going to be enjoying, hopefully, FX's The Strain.
The Strain.
Please go to iTunes and Stitcher and other places and find the Got Your Milk podcast. If you're a fan of Song of Ice and Fire by George R. R. Martin or HBO's Game of Thrones, download the Joffrey podcast. And if you're at all intrigued by this new book, Go Set a Watchman from Harper Lee, the sequel / prequel to Kill a Mockingbird, go to iTunes, Stitcher, and download the Go Set a Watchman read-along podcast with me and my friend Tasha. So, until next week, you'll see us in
Lost Hope.